to Beyond the Ring, a podcast that covers all things in the stock show industry from the informative to the insane, starring Ryan Rash.
Hating to lose more than loving to win is why I've been so successful.
And Dale Hummel.
Ignorance is not an excuse, it's just expensive.
Now on with the show.
Welcome to Beyond the Ring. This is Dale Hummel, along with co-star Ryan Rash.
Hello, hello, hello.
Ryan, we're recording a little later in the week than usual, and that should be a positive for current events.
Well, I mean, you know, it is.
Was there anything going on this week? I didn't.
Let's see, the president almost got killed again.
Again. That'd be number three or third attempt, minimal.
I think it's actually four. Yeah, it's four, sir.
Is it four?
It's yeah, a lot. The one at the rally, the golf course, and then the shooter got into Mar-a-Lago, and now the whatever.
I forgot about the Mar. He wasn't there, but that doesn't mean he wasn't trying, I believe.
Oh, he was in Mar-a-Lago, I thought, but not like at that time, but like around there or something. But anyway, yeah.
Got it. So yeah, I mean, this is interesting to me, and it was, they call him a suspect. I don't think there's any question that he is guilty of what he attempted to do. Cole Thomas Allen, 31 years old, Torrance, California. What is amazing to me, he gets into that hotel and he gets to the security checkpoint with a 12-gauge shotgun, a 38-caliber pistol, two knives, four daggers, and enough ammunition to kill many people. I would think you could not get that close with all of that.
So I think back to this was years ago, but like, do you remember that the shooter at Vegas that killed all the people at the concert or whatever? Okay. So like, I know that man took this rifle in a suitcase up to his hotel room, but like, unless this shotgun was in a suitcase, how do you just walk into the front door of any hotel carrying a shotgun?
I don't know that he did. You assume it's in a suitcase, maybe a golf bag, because it wouldn't fit in the suitcase well. I think you could get in.
But there's been no reporting about that.
No. But this hotel, knowing what's coming as far as that
you would
the
think
president,
that
yes.
The president and all the cabinet and all these people are there for this correspondence there. You would think there would have been a metal detector at the front door.
Yeah, screening would start week before, 2 weeks before, whatever is needed for anybody that's going to be checking in for that amount of time.
I stayed at the same hotel as Sleepy Joe in Utah a couple years ago, and you couldn't park at that hotel, even if you were a guest.
You and Sleepy Joe do have kind of the same taste.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Before, like, they had the Secret Service had the entire front parking lot marked off. You went through two metal detectors before you ever got to the lobby. When you got to the lobby, you had to present your ID, your room key, and then this other paraphernalia thing that they gave you once you checked in, and they frisked you. And this was just Sleepy Joe was going to some dinner in Utah to raise money for the Democrats. So I don't understand how this happened. I do not.
I don't either. And the other, then let's take it one level further. The fact that I believe four shots were fired, and it appears now they're questioning it, that this Cole Thomas Allen actually shot a Secret Service agent in the chest or in the vest, so it didn't harm him. Now they're asking if maybe that was friendly fire and it maybe didn't come from him. These things should be very clear. It should not be that complicated.
And this days later. How do we not know exactly what
happened? I mean, people, everyone's watching this transpire. The Secret Service, they were there watching it. How do we not know exactly what's going on? And to me, I guess maybe it'll change. But there's no question, at least initially, that Cole Thomas Allen fired shots, right? We assume.
That
was reported that way.
That's what if it was reported. I haven't heard anything different.
Past the checkpoint, between the checkpoint and the banquet hall where the president and a lot of his administration are, if he fired shots between those two points, how is he not dead?
I do not know. And so, I mean, this all happened very late at night. And of course, I was not in front of a TV, but like was getting all these whatever. At first, I thought he was dead. Then he wasn't dead and all this other stuff. I mean, I don't know. I know you don't get on Facebook or anything like that, but I did post this picture of Trump and he's got his cell phone and he's taking a picture of the shooter on the ground. It may be AI generated, but it was just
It may be AI generated.
I don't put it past him. I do not put it past the man to take a picture of the dude with his cell phone.
He was really nowhere. Don't. He was not even on the, he was long ways away.
I don't care if it was AI generated or not. It was the funniest thing I have seen in a long time. But so, that was the only positive thing I got out of any of this.
I heard something about the Secret Service agent that was shot in the vest actually fired off shots. And at that time, Allen fell to the ground, but he wasn't hit. And then they arrested him. So I kind of can understand that. Maybe they assumed he was hit. So they, I don't know. In that situation, this is going to sound bad, but it just is what it is. If I'm a Secret Service agent or I'm there trying to protect the president and somebody comes through with that, with a shotgun and is firing his weapon, I probably unload on him. I probably don't stop even when he hits the ground.
No, like, you feel him full of bullet holes.
Yeah. Save some taxpayer dollars on the trial.
I mean, yeah, no. Mm-mm. But
yeah, that doesn't all. I understand maybe they're trained to do it differently and all those things. I'm not pointing fingers at them for not doing that, but it seems very odd to me.
And this is just a side note. And I don't think there are any Democrats listening to this. But anyway, for this to be the party that hates guns and is so pro-gun control, they shoot at an awful lot of Republicans. That's all I got to
say. They seem to find guns, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Thinking of Democrats, is Rainbows and Butterfly a Democrat?
I just leave that man alone.
He confirmed he was still listening.
Yes, I know. And he's going to unplug all of your electrical cords at the next show he told me.
Okay, I have something that I don't know if you're aware of, but I feel good about, and maybe it will not amount to anything, but it's a start, that James Comey surrendered Wednesday to law enforcement.
What did he get indicted for this time?
So this is this, and I was unaware of this. It just popped up, so I looked into it a little bit further. So these charges stem from a 2025 social media post, and at the time he was the FBI director. I believe he was from like 13. No, he wouldn't have been. He would have been 13 to 17. I don't know. Social media featuring. Okay. These are from a 2025. So he was a former FBI director. Post social media posts featuring seashells arranged to display 8647. So I did not know what that was. So I looked it up and maybe had AI help me a little bit. So 86 is slang, means to get rid of something, remove it, eliminate it. If originated in restaurant, diner, culture, meaning an item was no longer available or someone was being thrown out.
When you 80, that's a mafia term. When you 86 somebody, you
kill. Yes, yes. And 47 refers to Donald Trump, the 47th president. So somebody must have set these out, shells on a beach. Maybe it was Comey. He claims it wasn't. He stumbles upon this 8647 written on the beach in seashells, takes a picture of it, and puts it on his social media. His defense coming from him. Simply saw an interesting shell formation on the beach and posted it, saying, didn't realize some folks associated those numbers with violence.
Right.
He was the FBI director.
Sure did. I hope they... I see, I am not one like you to like randomly shoot people. They can shoot him in the kneecap and I'm perfectly fine with it.
Well, people that deserve it.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, like, he deserves... I'd take out both of them. Yeah, I'm out. But that's just bullshit what he's saying. And again, I don't know if this is a prosecutable offense, but the total bullshit what he's talking about, that he saw an interesting shell formation on the beach. So he posted it.
He's such a liar.
Give me a break. Something a little closer to home for you. As of April 29th, Florida has formally implemented restrictions on animals coming out of Texas.
Imagine that.
Screw worm. So I talked to Chase a little bit about it, and this is the first state. There will be more. I didn't know a lot about screw worm, but Chase very much educated me that we're not just, some people think this is just a cattle issue. This covers cattle, goats, sheep, deer, horses, even humans. basically any warm-blooded animal can be affected by it. And how it becomes a problem, there needs to be an open wound as the target for the screw worm, and it will burrow in and anchor itself in, and then it starts going downhill from there. But fresh wounds, whether it's dehorning, castration, even an ear tag, umbilical cords of newborns are seen to be targeted by these screw worms. Any cut, any abrasion, even like where a tick bites that animal, the screw worm can get in through there. So any type of open wound is where it's going to go. And from there, it's a problem. The difficulty is when it's across species, I'm not saying hard to detect, but difficult, it's going to be a problem. So Florida at this point has, I think, banned 6 South Texas counties, probably down there in that Rio Grande Valley, I'm assuming.
Probably where your favorite show, the Rio Grande Valley Livestock Show, is.
And they do
those
have
at the counties that yeah. probably, yeah.
And they are, I mean, you physically can get an animal from there to Florida, but it's a lot of vet inspection, a lot of paperwork. Probably not very practical to do it, but it can be done. The difficulty is right now there's a confirmed case 62 miles south of the Texas border. Mm-hmm. So it's getting closer. Prediction on when it will reach the U.S. It's not if, it's pretty much when. And that is currently June or July of this year.
And this is going to sound trivial to most people, but like I feel bad for my state because there are a lot of kids that are planning on going to junior nationals in June and July. And because of this, they may not be able to get to go. Like that's real.
Yeah. I dug a little deeper and I think a lot of states will hold off until there is confirmation, but then they will follow suit.
Yeah,
and
there may be confirmation tomorrow. 62 miles.
Exactly. And just because the screw worm makes it across the border, and it probably already has, but we need to see a confirmed case, and that could take a while also. And they're releasing as many sterile male screw worms as they can, and the females only breed one time. So they breed with a sterile screw worm. That's how we pushed them back all the way to Panama Canal years ago, and it took a long time to get them there. We can push them back. The difficulty is we just can't make enough sterile males quick enough. So my guess is it encroaches into Texas. Eventually, we push them back, and maybe it doesn't spread, hopefully, outside of Texas. But it would be very easy for that to happen on animals going back and forth across the state. And I'm not calling for a Texas quarantine. Don't think that at all. And I don't know enough about it to even speak on the best way to control it. But it's going to be a problem. The commercial world is going to be impacted. What about all the livestock in Texas that are slaughtered outside the state of Texas from a commercial perspective? It goes very, very deep, and the economic impact is going to be staggering, I think. I don't know how all this plays out. Man, that would be great if they never cross the border. I just don't know if that's realistic. And what's interesting is I heard more about this a year ago than I have today. So it's odd to me how it's not being covered at the moment when it can impact, I mean, everyone's life in the livestock industry, whether you live in Texas or not. It's going to impact things. It's going to make things very, very difficult. So it's there. Hopefully it's being addressed. As I know they put a lot of money, I forget, several $100 million. They threw a lot of money at making sterile screw worm males to try to push this back. And I think it works. It just takes time to get it all in check. Other current events.
I don't know.
Well, I would like to acknowledge our sponsor, ShowFresh H2O. You've heard me talk about the benefits of keeping show stock on water. Short of hauling your water from home, this is clearly a low-cost option with a huge return. ShowFresh H2O can be purchased at your favorite show supply trailer or at swampfox.com. Ryan came up with a title not very long ago, a few days ago.
Yes.
Sense and Sensibility. Did I get it right this time? You know why I got that right? Because you texted to me.
Yes, I'm very well aware.
Well, tell us a little bit about the direction you want to go here. I think there's some of these things we've probably talked about. We just never lumped them all into one episode.
Well, it just, again,
back judging shows, and this is not aimed at anyone's show, so nobody freak out because people do that. But anyhow, like, I think that there are things that as spectators or as show managers or stuff that we can do, that just common sense things that will make the show ring experience enjoyable for everyone. And a lot of times they're just, and these are not hard things. They just get overlooked. And so I just thought maybe we do a little crash course on sense and sensibility.
Things that we can make minimal changes with great benefits.
Yes, that would be correct.
What would you like to start with? I can throw somebody under the bus in the beginning.
Oh, well, then get with it.
This is one of them that you threw out there that is also very high on my list, or even more so my wife's list. So do you know what Fugate gives out for prizes for his Pee-wee show at the Illinois State Fair?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
Scooters.
Oh, yeah, terrible idea.
Explain to us your encounter with scooters.
I didn't have an encounter with scooters.
You didn't get run over by one? Nothing like that?
No, not that. No,
that would be a much better story.
But I have had close calls with scooters and strollers and all these other things. And I don't want to make people mad. First off, if
you don't really, you don't care.
No, I don't want to make people mad. Like, cause there are people that need a scooter to get to the show. Like,
got it. We're not talking about people. That. We're not talking about that.
No, I'm talking about those too. Yes, I am.
Okay. So I was not. And for the record, I am not talking about those. I'm okay with those.
But let me get this out. First off, for you parents, and I guess Mr. Fugate, that allow your children to bring a scooter or a hoverboard or whatever that thing is that you stand on and it drives forward that you got run over with at Arizona National a couple years ago. I don't remember what that thing's called. But anyway, y'all need to be shot in the kneecap. Because there's no place, there is no place for children to have those at a show. And so that's that.
Now, out in some parking lot away from everything.
No, not even there. Because then they're going to get run over by somebody in the parking lot in a big dually truck and it's going to get hurt. Nope, they don't need them. They could have them at home. Like, I'm serious. If I was the president of the United States, you know my first order of business would be? I would ban those scooters that you pay money to ride around downtown. I would literally have them all destroyed, locked up. They would be no longer. That would be my first. I hate those things. But anyway.
I kind of like them.
I'm sure you do. You also think you need to ride a motorbike. Secondly, now, if you are a disabled person and need a scooter to get to the show ring, all this other stuff, I do not want you to think that I am talking bad about you, and I'm not. Just be very cautious, because some animals are not well trained. Some animals have never seen a scooter before, and so if you are right there at the, you know, entrance to the show ring or something like that, it could be very dangerous. Same thing goes with strollers. I do not know in all of these years at all of the shows that I have attended, and I have seen so many close calls, it scares me how a child in a stroller has not been severely hurt.
I would agree with that.
And I'm not wishing that on anybody. I just think it is literally.
I think a lot of them that are coming through.
Divine intervention that has not happened.
Many that are coming through with a stroller, I don't think they even know any better. I really don't.
No, but kennel people should.
Yes, livestock people.
And there are people that I'm just like, you're just asking to have your baby in a bad situation here.
It's just not good. I'm with you.
And on those things again, if you've got your baby in a stroller, don't sit on the front row because the animals are going to walk by there and the baby may cry.
Are you anti-baby today?
No, I'm not anti-baby, but I'm telling you, I have seen this too many times where foreign objects that are not normally associated at a show ring scares an animal inside the arena, and then we have a disaster. Sense and sensibility, people.
Continue, please.
And since I'm already kind of in great bad taboo area,
baby Mo, just keep going down how everybody should be sterilized or something.
So now
like a screw worm,
the dogs I'm sorry. Even the service dogs. And I do know that some people need service dog. If you have to have a service dog, sit on the back row. Leave the dogs
You are
home.
Opening up a big can of worms for everybody to be upset.
I don't care. Leave the dogs at home, or if you take your... And there, I have known
the
many
service
dogs.
Service dogs are very, very well trained.
And I'm still saying...
Not emotional
I have seen,
dogs, but...
I have seen a calf freak out by seeing a dog in a stand, and the kid got hurt. I'm just telling you. And if you have... And I have seen hundreds of dogs that are the most well-trained, well-behaved animals in the history of the world at shows. And I'm fine with those at the stall. If you're at your stall and that dog is trained and going to stay perfectly fine, don't bring it to the ring ever. Also, think about this, Dale. Maybe you have the most perfectly trained dog in the world and you're a cattle shower. But there's also sheep and goats there, and they have dogs running after them trying to exercise them. What's the sheep going to do when they see the dog? Freak the you-know-what out.
I agree.
So, yeah. Again, you just got to think not just about yourself, but about everybody else. I'm sorry. I have issues.
So what have we picked on? We picked on babies, children.
And disabled.
People that need service dogs, people that elderly that ride a scooter.
Not you. This is all me.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm bringing this out. I'm being clear. And dogs. Yeah. You can't run for president this year.
I'm not planning on it. It's not a presidential run here anyway.
We need to kiss babies, own a dog, be nice to the elderly, embrace the youth for their vote. Yeah. You canceled all of them.
Oh well. Another thing, and Dale will say this is because I'm weird or whatever. I don't have a problem with kids having fun at shows. And if you want to play ball and toss the football and do all this thing, take it outside the barn. Outside the barn. In the parking lot. Same with those roping dummies that they all rope the head, whatever. Outside. Not in the barn. Not in the barn. Just don't do it. I want the kids to have a good time. I know there's downtime. And if y'all want to fly a kite, throw a frisbee, throw a football, whatever you want to do, that is great. Just do not do it in the show ring or in the stalling barn, because animals don't like those things. They do not.
In the show ring the night before the show's going on or something, like when there's nobody around.
When people are exercising? Yeah, no. No.
Okay. I said when nobody's around, not when people are exercising.
Oh, so then you want the children out there at 12 o'clock at night when they need to be in bed.
I don't know, but I am with you. I have politely explained to children many times that we're throwing a football in the alleyway and clearly disrupting things, that, hey guys, you need to go outside. And they've always responded very respectfully and moved.
No.
But you probably shouldn't have to tell them.
No, but I mean, I want the kids to have a good time. I do. I really do. I think that's important, because you want them to have fun. It can't be all just work, work, work and stress, stress, stress. But I just don't think those things need to happen inside the barn, because some animal is going to be upset about it. And whether an animal gets upset or not, I'm telling you, there's going to be a daddy or a mommy that gets upset, and they're going to chew your kid's ass. And then you're going to get mad. Somebody chewed your kid's ass, and then they're going to be a fight.
You're right. That's about how it works out.
Just how it is. Like,
I'm not arguing with you. I have one that I addressed, and I think I've talked about this on here, and this is maybe a little off. Maybe you'll tell me it doesn't fit in here, but this goes to show management, or maybe even higher than that, the state 4-H and state FFA people that require, and this, I'm just going to tell it how it is. I was judging the Oregon State Fair Hog Show, and 98 plus degrees, high humidity. And I remember being in the FFA division, and all the kids were coming in their corduroy jackets. I mean, they were red-faced. They were struggling. And I got on the microphone. I said, guys, it is not going to make any difference to me where you place if you do or do not have that jacket on. I respect the fact that you have it on. I understand it's encouraged or it's a dress code, but we need to bring in some practicality today. And the ag teachers ringside, they came after me, Ryan.
I'm not shocked.
But why do we require things? I'm not opposed to them wearing something if it's an FFA.
No,
show.
I am.
But this just doesn't even make sense.
I literally think since if you have to, like, the states that make you wear a 4-H or an FFA outfit, I think those kids should sue.
It seems like the West Coast and even the East Coast and the Middle America does.
And the poor little 4-H kids have to wear those green little Mount Me hats. It's just terrible.
Fine.
It's just awful. Awful. No,
I don't know that it's a great look, but as long as they're not cooking the child, I'm not going to argue that.
Oh, I will. I will stand up for fashion and the children.
So does this one even fit in your sense? And this fits in sense. This fits the topic, right?
I don't know, but they look sad out there, and they deserve to look sad because nobody should have to wear that shit. Nobody. I mean, I get it at National FFA Convention, or you're competing in a FFA contest. I'm all for official dress. At a stock show, no. Mm-mm, no. But.
Oh, my. Well, I'm going to go to one that, and I can take both sides of this one, but in some situations where you physically go turn your weight card in or your health papers or whatever's required, and they have a time deadline and there's a long line, that some people may miss it by a couple minutes for whatever reason, and all of a sudden everything they've done for months and the dollars they spent to get to the show and all that is gone. And then at the same time, you have the show running an hour behind and there's no accountability for something like that. But I guess I wish we could implement a little bit of common sense. I can think of one national show here recently or this past year that there were some things that needed to be done that maybe weren't typical for a show or the last show. And it wasn't necessarily in the book. It wasn't necessarily posted. It was announced over the PA several times. But that doesn't mean everybody was there, but it impacted several families that all of a sudden, They for the most part, as far as they were aware, did everything right, and now they're disqualified. When they went to try to correct it in the office, a matter of minutes to an hour later, it was no exception. And I cannot wrap my head around something like that, especially when it's something that's announced over the PA, and you don't know that everybody's there or listening. It wasn't something in print. It wasn't something in the book. And I'm not opposed to a superintendent or show management making some changes and announcing it, but give some leeway, use some common sense. Don't take that power trip and just run with it. I that is a horrible thing. And I visited with several of those families. And I mean, it was bad. And I understand they were on the PA saying, if you don't get to the office by a certain time with certain documentation, you will not be showing. And it's not that they didn't announce it, but this family had been there in the morning, went back to the hotel, and they didn't even, they had no idea. And there were several of them caught in it. So there, please, on the management side, I know we have to have deadlines if we're ever going to get things done and get classes broke and posted. I get all of that. But let's implement some common sense too.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, very bad.
No, that's I don't know what show that was, but that was a bad idea. Very bad idea. Talking about show management stuff, and we have said this a lot, but I think it goes worth repeating. And we just brought this up the other day, but like, if you're going to take a lunch break, announce it way in advance, just because so everybody can know and have time to adjust whether they're going to fit their animal before, later, whatever. Just always, you know, announce as soon as you possibly can. And that does not mean 30 minutes before.
No. And sometimes that's what it is. This makes a big difference for those that are trying to win these shows and getting those.
Oh, huge. Yeah. And I mean, people don't understand. Like, if let's say that you go and you get yours dressed and then they decide to take a lunch break and you're standing there, that's going to affect that animal. And it's really going to affect it if you have to wait through the lunch break and then you still win your breed or your division or your class or whatever. And then you got to wait even longer and you don't have time to take it down, re-rack, all this other stuff. It's a problem.
Maybe even when the show starts, almost announce when you're going to do it after a certain division or after a certain breed.
And one thing, I mean, y'all know I hate lunch breaks, but I know that I'm not every judge and some people like them and that's fine. But one thing is 90% of the shows ask me in the morning, do you want to take a lunch break? And I always say no. And so if they're asking me, I know they're asking the other judges. So you can announce at the start of the show, we're going to take a lunch break. And no, you can't tell them exactly when it's going to be, but you can say it's going to be as close to 11:30 as possible when we can end a breed or end a division or noon or whatever it is. So that way they've at least got an idea. And if your show starts at 8 and you say we're going to break as close to noon as possible, everybody can plan.
Agreed. I want to, and I brought this up, I think maybe even last week or a couple weeks ago. This is just ridiculous. And it's a very big pet peeve of mine, almost like the outlets. When we have camps taking up so much room that you have a main alley that you can't even get from point A to B, there's a very small walkway that chokes down everybody walking and animals trying to get to the show ring just so they can, we talked about, have their couches or 20 extra chairs or just have the biggest camp so they can look cool. I'm out. No. Way, way out. I'm out. Yeah. No. And you were on show management. We've talked about this many times as well, and I'll keep this one short because we have, but fitting rules that are posted in the book or very well known that are not enforced. You're hurting those that are following the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, you are.
So have no rules, right, Ryan?
Start at noon. That's the only rule I think that we should have. But nobody believes me. And then that was funny because somebody was asking me at a show not too long ago about rules and all this other stuff. And I said, it's a show in Missouri this last week. I said, I think the show should only have one rule. They all start at noon. And this lady joked, she said, well, that would be fine if you were the judge at every show. But if we start at noon with most judges, it's going to be a very late finish. I went, well, you're probably right on that. But another thing, I don't know how this is a thing, and it is probably one of my greatest pet peeves at a show. And if it was just at big shows where there's a lot of people in the stands that are not livestock people that are spectating, I could get it. But this happens at every show, every time this happens. If an animal gets loose, particularly a steer or heifer, cattle, the animal gets loose, and then we catch the animal, and then you people start clapping and cheering, and then the animal goes crazy again because of the loud noise. Why? Why?
They're happy that somebody caught it,
and so it can get away again.
I want to go further. When that animal gets loose, and you have ring help or somebody that decided to get in there and help. And even the person showing it on occasion, instead of calmly taking that animal to a corner or next to another one where an exhibitor can grab it, or using common sense and animal logic, they're running, running after the animal.
Oh, yes, because that's going to help things.
I've had this happen when I'm
running and lunging at the animal is going to help things. I do not.
I mean, I was at a show. Oh, I shouldn't say where it is. I'm not going to say where it is. Not that long ago, and here's a lamb. I'm walking past a wash rack area, and I believe it was a lamb and or a goat. I'll throw both in there so we don't throw anybody under the bus. And it slips its halter, and a kid or two notice it. And I mean, they're full out sprinting after this lamb or goat. And I very loudly called time out, guys. Just stop. Ho. And we calmed them down, and then here a couple more come and run that. And I took myself out of the situation and decided that, yeah, it's just going to have to be what it is. Craziness.
Yeah. And I get that a lot of times, especially when I am judging shows, and I mean, the hardest thing in the world catch is a sheep or goat because they can jump over you and all this other stuff. But KF gets loose. It's probably the most dangerous because calves are bigger and all this other stuff. But anyway, like I am dead level serious. I bet that I am the one that catches 75% of the cattle that get loose when I'm judging. Because
I think it's animal sense.
And the percentage may be higher than that, but I know it's at least 3/4 because I'm not the one that's going to go run at it. And I literally am yelling at people, do not run. And then they get 5 people trying to cut. Catch him up in the corner. You're just putting pressure on the thing and he's going to bolt between somebody. That's not how it works. But people, do not clap. Do not clap.
That's how it all. That's how this rant started, wasn't it? Clapping, yes, after it's caught.
Clapping. I have never, for the love of God, understood what makes people do that.
And you get a better applause then than you do when you ask for it.
Oh yeah, they jump up and get down, cheer and scream when a wild one gets caught. But clap for your kids at the end of class. Oh hell no, we ain't doing that shit. No. Refuse.
That is a little odd. Yeah, there's no sense in that one. Sensibility is out the door.
I just don't understand it. And I'm going to say this, and I have only had one experience like this in my life. And out of all the shows that I have judged and even watched, I have only had seen this one time. I think that 99.99999% of the photographers that are in the ring do an outstanding job. I think ring shots are the coolest things ever, and they know how to stay out of the judge's way. And so this is just one time that this person just could not get it and literally was in front of me the whole entire time. And just, again, this is the rare exception, but I think it's good to be said. If you're going to be a photographer inside the ring, be aware of the judge and make sure that the judge is able to get around, see everything that they need to be seen.
And I'm going to say 99% are hyper aware of such.
Oh, no, I said 99.999999. I mean, like I said, I've only one time, but that
one
time.
More courteous than they even need to be.
Oh, absolutely they are. But that one time, it's worth repeating because of that one time.
Did you visit with that photographer?
I tried. This person was not a livestock photographer. This was a local newspaper person, whatever. But... again, because that one time, I just think that needs to be said. Now, I will also say this, and this happens all the time, or not all the time, but a lot, and I don't get it. Why do we put hay in a backdrop? Why? Why? What is the first thing every animal is going to try to do is eat the hay that's at the backdrop? Well, why do we do that? Why?
I don't see it that often.
Oh, you don't go to any shows then. You just don't go to county fairs.
I don't.
It's at every backdrop at every county show almost.
I just don't understand that.
I do not either. In literally every, it doesn't matter if it's a sheep, maybe hogs don't all the time, some very rarely.
Don't be curious about it.
If it is a sheep, it is a goat or a calf, every single one of them is going to go to the first bale of hay or straw and try to chomp down. And then it's going to be a wreck ever since.
I've seen some straw. I'm not arguing that, but I haven't seen. I'm sure I have, but not.
Yes, you have. You just have not noticed. Go, I dare you to go back and look at pictures again. You would have to get on social media and count how many backdrop photos have bales of hay as decoration. I mean, it just wears me out the most. I don't understand it. I do not get it.
I just thought of one that I know we've talked about before, and that this is probably my last one unless something else pops up. Barring a home emergency or something that you have to take a call or have to know what's going on, judges just should not be looking at their phone during the show. Mm-hmm. Sets up just too much room to throw darts, complaints. Mm-hmm. All you could be doing nothing wrong, but it's not going to matter. And you could be doing a lot of shit wrong on it, both ways.
Right,
but it's just probably better not to. And I'm guilty, Ryan. If I have a break, I will check my phone.
Now I do it. I don't have a problem in the world if there's a break, person checking their phone. Yeah, I have a problem when if it's during break, I have no problem at all. If somebody in between classes looks down at their phone, just glances at it and puts it back, I can live with that. Well. It is when we are texting back, we are taking phone calls, all this other stuff. That's when I don't care what it is. You look like you're up to something.
So I can think back. I've checked my phone in between classes. I try not to, but if there's something that I'm expecting that's pretty important, I will sometimes check it between. I'd say normally no, but if there is an issue, I'll usually say something to the people at that desk that, hey, I may need to check this for whatever.
Oh, Once or twice I've been in a situation where I felt that I needed to check my phone at times, and I just told the whole damn, got on the mic first. I said, I'm just going to be
wide open.
I'm just going to be honest with y'all. If y'all see me looking down, glancing at my phone, this is the problem, and this is why I'm checking my phone. I don't want y'all to think there's any funny business going on here. And I know if I was out there and I was y'all and saw the judge checking his phone multiple times, I'd wonder what the hell's up. Well, this is what's up.
Fair enough. I think that's good approach.
Yeah. And so that's how I handled it. But yeah, I agree that is something that, and it is one of those things that one person sees it and it just goes like wildfire through the show ring and the barn, and then everybody's there. And it may just be as innocent as can be. And I'm telling you, by the end of it, you are getting told what to do in every time you check your phone. That's just the nature of the beast right there. That is just how it is. Another thing on show management to make the experience more enjoyable for everybody. And I want to say that with things like Showman App and other show programs and stuff like this, this is better. But like, as soon as you can post classes, post them. And I'm not talking about just printing out the paper and putting it on the wall. Either post them on social media, something, because very few times now are people actually going up there to the show ring where they're typically posted. They want to be able to have access to it on their phone, through a text, whatever. Go that extra mile. So everybody, it just makes everything run much smoother if they can access the classes on their phone, because they hear class 12 come to the ring and they can scroll through there and say, well, 13's got 6 head and 14's got 10 and whatever, all this other stuff, instead of walking 3 barns over to have to go up there and count. And I and my crew still go to the wall and count every single one and write it all down and check it on the phone. But I'm just telling you, much, much easier if you can have access it through an app or on social media.
Agreed completely.
Just one final thing, whether you are a spectator, a exhibitor, or a show manager, all this other stuff, and this should not even have to be said, but it does. Try to be kind, people. I know it's tough at times, and shows are stressful, and I get it, and I understand it, and I am probably one of the most stress-positive people at a show that you've ever seen, but we can still try to be kind in all the situations. And there are going to be, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not a saint. There have been times where I have not been kind to the show about a situation, but I try to be every single time. And even when there's something that I don't think is right or situation needs to be handled, I at least try to start out being kind. And that just goes for everybody. If you've got a problem with stall space and or Dale's electrical outlets or all this other stuff, let's try kindness first.
Great concept. I'm with you. This was good. Very good. Are you ready for your favorite part?
Sure.
Lance.
You still don't have a damn sponsor for this. So
I texted 2 people back. Both of them had talked to you prior.
I'm just saying.
Lance, is AI and ET and advanced reproductive progress ruining the industry?
Hey, that's a whole topic.
Yes, that's I have written down next to the question in parentheses, this will be a full topic. And this comes back from, a lot of it stems from Lanessa Farms, not far from here in Rensselaer, Indiana. Sheep and goat breeder. I don't know what type of, not a traditional show stock background that's coming into it from a little different perspective, but this Facebook page at this Lanessa Farms. They have a lot of people talking about it. And I think it's a great episode that we could have. And Ryan, they're
dwindling gene pool.
They're an hour away from here. I could even go visit them and do a little interview or to get some insight on what they're talking about. And it's not something completely new. We've talked about this or other people have talked about it, but right now, for some reason, it is getting a lot of attention and more so when we have artificial insemination, ET, cloning, all that. What we're doing is we're funneling the genetic pool down to just a few. And when there's the same bull, the same boar, the same ram, whatever being used so heavily across the industry, we're losing genetic diversity. And there's a lot of things that come with that some are concerned about. What I want to be very clear with, and I'm all in, I love the genetic side of it. I love talking about things like this. But I can tell you right now, in the stock show industry, it doesn't matter what we say or what we come up with by this funneling of genetics and lessening the genetic pool. We can talk all we want about it. It's not going to change. Are you not going to use that bull because everybody else did?
Again, I mean, I do think this is a full topic and I do want to do it. And this got brought up to me by a young lady at a show in Missouri. And I sent you that Facebook message and I thought it was a great point. And I do think it's a topic. I don't know if we can change it, but I think it's relevant and it needs to be discussed. And I don't know how much that I'm going to get or whatever, because I'm the person that I don't give a shit what they're out of as long as they look like what I want them to look like. But I am in the less than 0%.
Certain genetics that are what you like and what that genetic line leans to looking that way, you're going to be using those. I think it's a great, I love these kind of topics. I don't know that it accomplishes anything. I need to update my mind. I believe the thoroughbred horse industry, and this was a very long time ago when I was still teaching animal science, I believe the only way you could artificially inseminate is if you had that other horse on farm. Maybe not even that. But they had foresight in this where they wanted to keep the value of those studs up and the purchase value rather than everybody artificially inseminating to one horse. You can't do that. So the horse has to be on the farm that you're breeding, I think was what it was. And this was many, many years ago. I'm sure it's changed, but other industries have put thought into this and somewhat regulated it. There is no way that you're going to regulate that in this industry at this point. It's not happening, but great topic to talk about. Great topic. Andrea has the next question. And unfortunately it says Dale, doesn't say Ryan, but Ryan, I would love for you to come in on it. You have mentioned in podcasts that you do fecals for your clients to monitor parasites and know when to treat. Can you share any resources for how to do this? What type of test do you recommend? What equipment do you use? Do you have any educational resources you recommend for learning the skill? Andrea, it's not difficult. I think you could probably go on YouTube and learn it. Better to maybe have a local vet or a vet tech show you, or somebody that's run hundreds and thousands of them. But a microscope of, I'm going to say a minimum of 100x, probably 400x is more ideal. Fecal float solution you can buy at Valley Vet. Fecasol is all it's called. We use a fecalizer where we put the fecal sample in along with the fecal solution, allow it to float for 10 to 20 minutes prior to setting the slide cover on there to check it. You can do what's called a counting chamber slide, so you can actually get a specific egg count. We don't always do that. I'll run it under the microscope, and if it's loaded, I'm not too worried. It's just got more than what I feel comfortable with, and we move on. So there's nothing difficult about it. And I'm going to say that I haven't looked, but I've taught people how to do it in 30 minutes, and I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube channels that is huge. And I know everybody thinks this sounds simple. But I can assure you, we get fecal samples in from everywhere in the country. And I encourage them, if you have some lambs or cattle or pigs or even goats that aren't from us, it doesn't take me long to run them. And a lot of times our feline manager will run the fecals and I'm not even doing it. But it makes a difference. And very seldom do we have negative fecal samples come in. Negative to the point that they're low enough and we can sustain a certain level of my, I understand that that's where most veterinarians want to be, but even to get down to that, there's even though that animal doesn't have the screaming shits, its hair coat's still okay, it's not skinny, doesn't mean that there isn't a parasite load absorbing and interfering with nutrient absorption, I should say. So I think it's huge, and I think we need to look at it more. If you don't want to do it yourself, you don't have somebody that's going to do it, your local vet will do it. I don't think it's overly expensive usually, but huge, huge to get that done. The next one is anonymous, Ryan. And I didn't even put the name down, so I can't screw up. I wrote down anonymous because I have screwed these up before. Please keep this anonymous, but I have been hired to judge a county fair master showman competition, but I only have experience showing cattle. Any tips on what to look for in showmanship in the other species? Pigs, sheep, and goats. Thanks. That's all.
Call them back and don't judge it. That's my advice.
The problem is, I think with that, so many county fairs, I don't know they can find somebody that has multiple experience that's willing to come and do it. Yes. What's that?
They should have never said yes then.
Well, I'm saying I don't know. I mean, I don't know there's many people that can do all four, let alone close enough to every county. So you might have to bring more than one in and bring species-specific people in for each segment.
I do not think that a person should be judging master showmanship anywhere if they only have knowledge in one.
I'm not arguing that, but who do you suggest does it then?
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. That is an absolute...
I'm going to try to help this person, even though they shouldn't have said yes. What you need to do is you need to get on Walton Webcasting or some other streaming service and watch the big national shows and watch either the showmanship contest or some of the actual shows so you'll know what the hell to look for.
I'm going to recommend you go watch San Antonio or the shows that Taylor Fort puts on because you can see things like you're there.
But
and Taylor has showmanship. Taylor ought to maybe be a sponsor. What do you think?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to reach out. We've promoted that one enough.
But that is what I should do. But I also do not think you should have accepted the job. Next.
That's it. That's three.
Yay.
Well, Ryan, thank you. And I apologize to you and Clifton. I had some things going on today that we moved the record time.
We
many
made
times.
It work. It's fine.
It's all good. But thank you. Until next week, be safe.
Y'all come back now. You hear?